If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. All right. In today's episode, we answered listeners' questions after a 52-minute intro portion. Now, the intro portion is where we talk about current events, our lives, family stuff. This is where we have fun, loose conversation. After that is when we got to the questions. By the way, you could check the show notes for timestamps if you want to skip around your favorite part. And if you also want to ask us a question that we can choose from, go to Instagram at Mind Pump Media. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is NCI. This is a certification course for coaches and trainers. Teaches them how to build a better business and how to be more successful with their clients. And if you go to ncimindpump.com, you'll get a coach's toolkit for free. Teaches you how to get more leads, how to turn those leads into paying clients, how to onboard those clients, and how to get basically better results. So it's ncimindpump.com, totally free coach's toolkit. This episode is also brought to you by ButcherBox. They deliver grass-fed meat, heritage pork, and wild-caught fish to your door with really good prices. Go check them out. Get $20 off your first order. Go to butcherbox.com/mindpump. We also have a sale this month on some programs. Maps Anywhere and Maps Hit are both 50% off. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code April50 for the discount. All right, here comes the show. I don't think I need to make the point that how you talk to people can affect them. What the things you say to people can affect their moods. What you say to the people around you can make them view you differently or the world differently, can change people's outlook. Well, check this out. That's true for how you talk to yourself. Studies on self-talk show that changing how you talk to yourself can have pretty profound effects on how good you feel, how anxious you are, how depressed you are, and whether or not you procrastinate or get things done. Now, it is challenging to change, but becoming aware of self-talk is the first step. So if you're going to talk good to anybody, talk good to yourself. Yeah, this one's an interesting one because a lot of people are not even aware of the way that they talk to themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Of what they say to themselves about themselves. And once you start to become aware, you go, oh, wow, I'm not
very... This is going to be like a therapy session for me.
I'm not going to be very... Yeah, do you have bad self-talk or what?
I had a lot, yeah. I worked through a lot of that.
Yeah, you've admitted that, right? You've admitted that you used to beat yourself up type of deal, and that was kind of like that was what motivated
you.
That was
my fuel, yeah.
Right.
And you try to kind of reframe it and repurpose it. And like it's a lot of like successful people you've met, especially like athletes and I don't know, maybe like actors or something, but they tend to remember the haters and they remember everybody that like doubted them. And this, it's like, and they just put all this stuff like on their back to kind of carry them to pursue being excellent and being the best at their craft and all that kind of stuff. But it just really didn't serve me after, you know, athletics. Like I could say it kind of helped in terms of like just my, you know, toughness and my drive, but like I could have done that completely with a more positive outlook and not had all the gut problems and, you know, therapy and crap I had to get, you know, as a result.
Well, because then you're living with an asshole that you can't get away from.
Yeah.
Literally. And you're going to make mistakes.
Were you ever like that? Did you, how were you? Like, have you ever had to monitor? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. My self-talk would be either hyper negative or avoidant. So then I would go in the opposite direction. Like, oh, you don't need that. You don't want to do that. You want to do this over here type of deal. But you have to become aware of it. It's weird because it's so automatic. And then when you become aware, by the way, I know an easy trick to become aware. When you catch yourself doing it, instead of saying I, because a lot of times what you'll hear people will say to themselves like, oh, I'm so stupid, or I'm an idiot, right? Whatever.
Right.
Change I to your name. Huh. Put it in the third person. And then immediately you're like, so instead of like, God, I'm an idiot, be like, oh, Sal's an idiot. And then, oh, okay, maybe not or whatever. Mm. So you start to become more aware of that self-talk. But it's crazy because we're totally aware and can acknowledge like how negative that would be for someone else. Like if you and I were hanging out and I was just talking shit to you all the time about every little mistake you made and you're like, dude, don't do that. That sucks. It feels like shit. Like why, you know, I don't want to hang out with you. I don't want to talk with you. Like I'd be like, I would understand, but yet we do that to ourselves so constantly.
Not to mention the first step of anything coming true is first the belief of it. Right? Mm. So if you are going to start to say to yourself that I'm an idiot or say these negative things.
It means
you
believe it.
Yeah, it means you believe it and it's more likely to become true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it came from because I shouldn't have any sort of, I shouldn't have the confidence I had. But I think I understood that at a pretty young age. Like I knew that I had to believe it. If I didn't believe it, nobody else was going mm-hmm. to. So I had to believe that I could do it. Anything was possible.
Now, did you practice it? Did you write it out or did you?
I didn't. But what I do know, the part that I can recall as far as the journey of the transition of that, a lot of that is accepting your faults, accepting your shortcomings, accepting that you,
right.
And so I think I came to that really quick and early, like really quick and early. I realized like, you know, I was the crooked teeth, the skinny kid, the not coming from money, So I had a lot of this stuff already kind of working against me, like really early. And it was just like, it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I could either one, I could sit and cry about it and be angry about it and bitter about it, or I could opt to change this. And so I was on a mission really early to just change that. And a lot of that came from my first believing that I could, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about like, I mean, you're describing that. Well, I think for me, it was like, I assumed everybody thought the worst. I didn't think the worst of myself. Like that was the weird part. It was like, I had a lot of confidence in my ability and what I could personally do or like my faults I'd recognize. But I would always assume like, for some reason that everybody thought the worst in terms of like me being smart or me being, you know, capable or, you know, athletic or whatever it was. Like I was like, for some reason I just put myself in this spot to work my way out of always.
Yeah. I think, the challenge with this is for some people, it's so automatic. I don't think they're fully aware of how they talk to themselves. And then the other challenge is, I mean, it'll motivate you. It just sucks. Yeah. It just doesn't feel good. So like you're making progress, but you can't like feel or revel in the progress. And then when you fail, it's the difference between, I dropped the ball. Like you're playing a game. They pass you the ball. You drop it. I dropped the ball. True. Mm-hmm. That's different than I'm an idiot.
Well, yeah.
Or I'm stupid.
There's one
or
of
I'm a loser.
It's like, okay to recognize your shortcomings, recognize your fuck ups. It's another thing to identify as.
Yeah. Them. And say, I'm a bad person.
I always do this.
Right. In front of those things, you are identifying as that thing. And that's where you mess up. What you can do is say things like, man, I could have done that better right there. You know, versus saying
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Versus saying I'm a loser. I'm always late. I don't get these things. I don't like doing that. Like once you put that in front of it, it becomes a part of your identity.
Yes.
And you are controlling that. And that's a very dangerous thing.
And you do believe what you say. It's so weird because I was having this conversation. We've talked about this on the show before, but who is that? I remember who I was talking to, but there's a greater, a significantly higher percentage of people with depression who also have autoimmune issues. And they're finding that the depression, because you could say, okay, well, if you have an autoimmune issue, you're more likely to be depressed. There's actually research that shows that depression leads to some of these autoimmune issues. If you're hating yourself constantly, your body believes your thoughts.
Yeah.
Your body believes your thoughts. Why wouldn't your immune system identify the thoughts and potentially attack the very thing that you're hating the most?
Of course.
You know, and now to make this a fitness thing here, it's like having a client that's like, oh, I ate that dessert and I was off my plan versus I'm such an idiot. I'm such a loser. Yeah. I can never succeed.
Can never do this like consistently.
So different. Like when I would have clients that would be objective, but they weren't like, I'm a loser. Their chance of success was way higher than the clients. I mean, we've all worked with those clients where they beat themselves up so bad about a mistake, a step back, which everybody's going to have. They beat themselves up so bad. I knew like, okay, if I don't help reframe this or help this person move out of this, the way that they're feeling about themselves, we are not going to be able to move forward. This is not going to be something that they're going to be able to sustain because you're going to make mistakes. Like nobody's perfect.
I mean, I've never met a successful person in life that didn't believe that they were destined to be successful or they thought they could be successful. I've never met somebody who was just like, I just didn't think I could be successful. And
it's just weird one day.
It just happened. Like, no, it's like you talk to someone who is very successful in life and you ask them, did you believe mm-hmm. when you were younger if you were going to be? Yeah. And a hunt across
the, very deliberate
across the board. They all believed it first. I don't think it's possible for it to happen until you first believe it. You have mm-hmm. to first believe it, and then the work happens, right? Mm-hmm. Then the consistency, then the failures, getting back up again, and all mm-hmm. that stuff happens. That's all part of the process.
It's a lot of this starts in childhood, because this is old culture. Like, I think a lot of us were raised this way, and past generations were. You're a bad kid, you're a good kid. If you do this, you're good. If you do this, I like you. If you don't,
ping ponged all the time.
Yeah, and kids will naturally go there, and if you reinforce it, they start to believe it. So like, I see this like when my little one's like, my 3-year-old, he'll do a 3-year-old thing, right? He'll throw something he's not supposed to, or he'll knock something over or whatever, because 3-year-olds are impulsive and he's energetic. He's a little boy or whatever, and so I noticed that he'll start to feel bad about it, which then makes him embarrassed, which then brings out the tantrum or whatever. So when he does something like that, I'll go up, and you can tell he runs away because he's like, and I'll go up to like, you're not a bad kid. I love you. I still love you. I like you. Even when you do stuff like that, it brings the intensity way down. And then we can talk about what happened.
Yeah.
All right. You threw your sister's AirPods against the wall. That kind of made her upset. If you want to throw things, tell me. I'll find something soft for you to throw. Try not to do that stuff. See if you can identify when you're going to do it or whatever. Otherwise, he starts to kind of beat himself up. Or like he did this the other day where he impulsively throws things. It's like a thing for him. He threw, I don't know what he threw. He threw something hard. It was like a Lego or something, like one of those big blocks at his cousin's head, right? So bang, hits his head. So he's all upset about it, right? So then what he did was he got a toy. He went up to his cousin and he hit himself in the head to show him like, so he's feeling like that. And that shows me like, oh man, he feels like he's a bad kid.
Yeah.
He has to show his cousin that. So I'm like, no, buddy, listen, you're not a bad kid. You just threw something without thinking about it, type of deal. But yeah, it starts as a child because that's where you develop this inner voice. And then that inner voice doesn't want – so you have to consciously change it because it's so automatic. It's like a recruitment pattern exercise. It's so automatic that it runs in the background. You don't even realize it's running. Yeah. And when you start to identify, you're like, oh, shit, I say that about –
you start pumping yourself up.
Yeah, I mean,
that's part of it. You gotta like start viewing yourself in a different light and start really, having that belief system.
Yeah.
I think
that's hard to do, dude. Coming from somebody like me, dude, I'm like, not you're awesome today, bro.
No, that's
I'm not gonna fucking say that, stupid.
I never did that. I think that's
not even real though, right?
I think that's so cheesy. I think it's
you have to be honest,
there's people that believe in the affirmations in the mirror every morning and saying some shit like whatever, do you, boo, whatever you need to
if
do.
If you don't really believe it, it doesn't work.
That's right. That to me, the most important part of all of it is believing. So maybe somebody needs to express it, say it, write it down before they actually will.
So my wife did this thing where she wrote mantras about things she actually believes to be true about herself that are good.
Yeah.
She saved it. Whenever she gets in that negative, she starts to have that negative talk.
Yeah, that's good.
She pulls up the mantra, and these are things she actually believes about herself. She'll read it, and it changes everything.
My brother-in-law, so I was with him, and I won't share too much because he shared it with something that he's like, I haven't shared this with anybody, so I don't want to sell him out completely, right? Tell you which one it is. But I thought it was really cool, so I want to share. I hope he's okay with it. So he had done this thing. He's going to be turning 50. And so he sat down and like wrote out all these things, like who he is as a man and like who, like as a husband, as a leader, what he were, like this whole thing. And he wrote it out like, I am this, I am that, I am this, I am all these things. And he actually wrote it in a way, it almost reads kind of like a prayer a little bit. And like he reads it every single morning and then connected to that. Like he was going through his phone. He's like put a lot of work in this, right? Connected to that are all these practices and behaviors that lead to him being this man. And he holds himself accountable to checking off.
Wow, that's great.
Yes, to checking those off in the year. And when he's 50, he says, I want to be able to read this and feel like, yes, I'm 100% that. Yes, I am 100% that. And here's the actions I took to be that.
That's so great.
I know. I think it's really cool.
That's so awesome.
I thought it was really cool. Like one of the things that he's doing right now is like he's wanting to give back some of his time. Like he wants to be a leader in his community and stuff like that. And so he's going through their church and he's actually – basically, they're not like fully adopting a kid, but you basically become like their mentor. And so you can sign up. And so what he's done is he's got this 13-year-old boy who's been in the foster program and will probably be in the foster program his whole life. And he takes him to do all these activities. And so it's like he has so many hours a week.
It's like a big brother program.
Yes. Big brother program. Yeah. I was asking him all about it. I was super intrigued by it and what he's learning.
Sounds like something you would want to do.
Yeah. It was really cool. I thought it was really interesting what he's doing. I did think it was cool or really interesting too, that they told him that they encouraged him not to do things that cost money. And to do things that both a 50-year-old and that a 13-year-old want to do. It makes you be a little bit more creative, like something that like you would both enjoy doing. Huh. And so they've done some stuff like hiking and mountain climbing and some like physical outdoors activities and things like that. But he's like, you know, like one time I wanted him to lead it and he's like, oh yeah, let's go to the jumping trampoline thing or like that. And he's like, do you see any 50-year-olds doing that?
I told you I tried to get on a trampoline the other day. Oh no.
You just leak.
Yeah. No, I didn't do that. Stop.
Don't lie, bro. I'm going to make you get on one next time.
That's not what I
did. Do you not see him flapping his hands like this?
I don't think I can fly. Anyway, hey, so listen, social media is pretty funny, right? There's these trends that are going around right now, and I'll talk about, there's two of them that are interesting. One of them is this, it's apparently a TikTok phenomenon, but now it's going to all the other platforms. It's called trad wives. Trad is short for traditional wives.
Oh.
I don't know if Doug, did I send you the clip of this?
You did.
Can you play this up on the TV? I want Justin and Adam, because I want your thoughts on this. And please don't impulsively react, but like wait and think about it for a second, because I thought a lot about this.
Okay.
Because it is social media phenomenon.
Okay.
Is what's happening. So let's see if Doug can pull it up here.
So
if you are not familiar with the term trad wife, it is a woman who chooses to live a more traditional life with ultra-traditional gender roles. So the man goes outside the house, works, provides for the family. The woman stays home, and she's the homemaker. She takes care of the home and the children.
All right, Doug, you can stop that. All right, so what are you guys' thoughts on
okay,
that?
Okay, so...
Because I have a lot of thoughts.
I don't know.
This is a reaction for sure.
Well, are they kind of mocking it, or is it supposed
to? No.
Because it comes off as a bit of a mockery.
They're promoting it as a lifestyle.
Really?
Yes.
I was going to say, that comes off a little mockery to me. Yeah. Like, it doesn't come off as like tongue-in-cheek a little bit. That doesn't seem like they're really trying to glorify
they it. They are promoting
with it. The music and then like the over-the-top, yeah, like 50s dresses on.
Here's my problem with it. So first off, no tradition. The way that they looked, all perfect with their hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how many kids you got, lady? Yeah. You ain't looking like that. Making homemade cereal in the morning. Yeah. First of all, cereal exists because it's fast.
Yeah.
You ain't homemade making cereal in the morning before your kids wake up. Tell you waking up 3 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why I felt like it's a little bit of a mockery. I don't feel like it's...
But it's popular, and I think part of it's popular because it's different, but I think it's like one of those pendulum swing things where so many girls are so like... Like, oh, I don't like this, like, what you guys are promoting. What's this other thing? Oh, look, the 1950s looks kind of cool. Like, maybe I want to, you know, do that.
I mean, the truth, probably in about 10 years, we'll probably land on a very better balanced message around that. Mm-hmm. We were so extreme one way, where in the 50s and stuff like that, it was the barefoot, pregnant, stay home, cook clean.
You had no other option.
You had no other options type of deal, right? Which obviously is not a healthy place to be. Mm-hmm. And then we swung the other way with the woman empowerment movement so hard that direction.
Where they said, I don't need a man.
Yeah. You don't need a man. A man's not, whatever, right? Yeah. And so
having kids is a burden. Don't say that.
And so now I feel like this is a part of the coming back. And then we'll probably have a better, healthy conversation around that. There's a little bit of both.
It's interesting to me because you also have this, like, on social media, this ultra, which has been, it's happened, this trend has happened a little longer, this ultra, like, traditional masculine movement where it's like dudes are like, yeah, I like to chop my own wood.
The opposite of that, right?
Yeah, I like to, you know, do all these things. And I only shave with a block of, you know.
From what I know right now,
yeah.
I'm more of a fan of this the traditional or trad wife thing more than I am that thing, because there's like all kinds of grifters going on right now in that. Like, it's.
Mm-hmm. You don't think that there's going to be girls, women that are grifting off other girls?
You're probably right. I mean, that's the thing I don't like about any of these,
because you know what that looks
movements.
Like to me? If you don't have kids and if you don't run a household and you're a girl, right, and you're watching this, you're like, oh wow, that's what it's going to be like. Like, you go in a house with three kids running around. It ain't like nice music and, you know,
everything looks great. You don't have time to cut those little individual squares
of cereal.
I'm going to make my own cereal.
Yeah, and when my husband comes home, I'll be so happy to serve him.
I like the idea. You know?
Yeah, right.
But it usually doesn't work out that way.
It's interesting because I feel like this opposing pendulum stuff is going on right now. Like, on one side, you have this like hyper-sexualization, it's, you know, nothing traditional is good. And then they're like, no, we need to be like – and it's not even traditional. It's like what advertising in the 50s showed as traditional, because that's not what it was like living in the 50s.
No.
That's what advertising showed when they were trying to sell you products.
No. Are we going to go back to smoking cigarettes and having scotch and working, and like being like mean to everybody?
You know, I don't know if it's a problem with like trends and things like that as much as it is the wrong people are finding each other. And what I mean by that is, like, when I look at like the, because here's the deal, there's enough beta ass dudes out there that probably need a chick to carry them in a relationship, carry them in a marriage, carry them in the household. There's dudes out there that want to slide right into that role. So, I mean, who am I to judge if that's what you want to do and you're totally okay? The problem is most of the women that are very strong like that, independent, that go out and go crush it in the work life, don't want that guy.
They want another.
Yeah. They want another killer.
Yeah.
And then that guy doesn't care for
some
that.
Of a killer.
Some dude who's making $10 million a year doesn't need a wife to make $10 million a year with him. He's like, I would rather have the traditional housewife. So that's the problem. The problem is the type of personality that goes out and crushes the work life balance or the work life as a female doesn't want the right match male is the super beta guy.
I heard the psychologist talk about marriage, and they were talking about how divorce rates really started to skyrocket when the message became that marriage was to fulfill you and make you happy. Whereas marriage used to be, hey, we're going to do life together and raise a family together. We're going to raise children together. Not like you complete me, I complete you. We're going to be happy all the time.
No.
But rather like, no, we signing up to do this to raise these kids.
Yeah.
And they said once that switch happened, then, you know, when the hard times happen, which they will, people bounce. You know,
I even try and practice, like, to your point, like even when Katrina and I argue over something, like I always argue from the point of a team. Like, even when she tries to, like, you know, I understand your feeling. I was like, no, fuck my feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, we're a team in this situation. Either you drop the ball or I drop the ball in this situation. Like, that's how I always look at it. I think that's like such a healthier way to look at this as instead of that we are these
win.
Yeah, exactly. We're either winning or losing. There was something that happened in our house the other day. We lost as a team.
Mm-hmm.
As the leader of the family, this was something that I wanted to happen. It didn't happen. I said it again. It didn't happen again. It's like, and whatever, shit happened. It is what it is. But like, when we're looking back at it, we don't need to go through all this like, oh, you feel that way, I feel that way. It's as simple as this. We failed as a team. And what do we need to do?
Kids gets in trouble at school or something, and we just went through this again. And that was the conversation, was we all collectively came together as a team, as a unit, as a family. You know, where are we dropping the ball? Where are the discrepancies? What do we need to address? Yeah. And you know, what are the habits we can create going forward so this doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
And it's like, we're all talking about this collectively. It's not singling out, you know, you, I can't believe you made this mistake. And you're so, you know. Like, I'm trying to take responsibility for the fact that this is the environment that you're in, and we need to figure out, like, maybe there's some things that we all need to do better.
There does seem to be a swing generally. I read another statistic that kids, I forgot what's the next generation. There was millennials, then there was, what was the one underneath them?
Gen Z,
and then there's another one that the younger generations are rejecting dating apps. Dating apps, precisely because they're like, they're not.
Is that true?
Yeah. That younger people are not wanting to go on dating apps. A lot of them are rejecting them and saying precisely like, I'm not feeling fulfilled. Like, this is not giving me what I want. This,
you know, I always wonder like how I would have handled things like that if it was part of my generation. Like, cause we were already past all that.
Yeah.
Right? I've never been on a dating app. I don't think anyone in here has.
No.
Have you done?
Time. Yeah.
You have tried. Did you ever go out on dates or anything like that from it?
I did a couple.
Just a couple.
Actually, I met Rachel through a dating app.
No shit.
Yeah, it was the pandemic. Nope, nobody was out. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow.
Pandemic.
We
only.
Never talked about that. I didn't.
It's true.
I didn't know that.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. So my point of bringing that up was that because I have like a buddy who's like still like living the single life, right? And he's like, I mean, he uses those apps to like he'll show me his calendar. And like
he's got a date here. Date
yes.
Here, date,
yeah. I mean, he'll date like 12 different girls over the course of like 2 weeks. It's so wild, dude. Because it's that easy, though. I mean, especially, he's a good looking guy.
Makes good money.
Yeah, it makes decent money. You know what I'm saying? It's
like, does he ever say to you like, oh, man, I really want.
Oh, he's so. He like that's Katrina's best friend. Right. So she's he.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's just not happy.
Yeah.
How old is he now?
Yeah. But he's our age.
That's
he's in his
40s. He's reached that age now where he's like,
yeah.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
It's not cute anymore, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool in your late 20s, 30s.
Is it hard? Do you think it's hard for someone like him? Because he's tasted the novelty. He's had all the opportunities, been with different girls. Obviously, successful guy, good-looking guy. Do you think it would be hard for him to back out of that and not play that game anymore?
I think it's less about that, and it's more common that something that I think all of us go through. And I think all of us have experienced this before, where there comes a time in your dating life where you realize, and this happens at different stages of everybody's life. Some people are lucky and they learn this in their 20s. Some people takes their 30s. Some people not till their 40s. Some people take 2-3 divorces before they figure it out. But most of what people are attracted to early on in their life are for all the wrong reasons. It's they think it's the right because they have this lust, right? You see this girl and she's hot. And so that attracts you that. And then the thing that connects you are all the wrong things.
Your traumas, your
insecurities, your all these things that are not healthy, mm-hmm. right? I want to be the father figure. I want to be the guy who teaches. And so I get the girl who has got the sign on her back that says, you know, I need help.
Yeah.
And so
or the girl who wants to fix the dude.
Yes. Yeah. And so you do these dating loops. Of it's a different person, but it's the same shit. You're still attracted to all your trauma and you don't realize that. And then you finally break that cycle. And I remember when I broke that cycle in my late 20s and, you know, it led like-
Was there like a moment where you're like, oh-
100%. Wow. I made a conscious decision. Like I am the next girl I date is going to be nothing like I've ever dated before. Like I remember deciding I was going to take this girl out and I was like, she's not like my type. Like I knew she was, like I thought she wasn't my type physically. And I'm like, I'm gonna date her based off of this different connection and of things that we have in common that seem healthier. Let me try this.
What's that show? That dating show? It's like be on that dating show.
Love is Blind.
Yeah.
So, but so that's what I think. And I think you know, I love my buddy to death. But I think he's still trapped in the like and all those apps do is it makes that process and turnover faster.
Because mm-hmm. you got a whole sea of people
in
that category.
Yeah, and you just go through more and more of them and you don't realize that they're all the same. They are. They could all be, you know, black, white, brown, gray. They could all be different colors, different races, different religions, but they all have the same trauma. They all have the same thing that you are. And I recognize that in myself that I kept going after these girls. And then I had to ask myself, why do I think I like that? I like it because temporarily it gives me this fulfillment. It makes me feel smart. Makes me feel strong. It feels good, all that. But then when I really unpack and go, okay, if I have to lock it down with this woman for the rest of my life, raise a child, build an empire with her, what if I had to build that character, what does it look like? Oh, wait, it doesn't. She doesn't have those attributes. Mm-hmm. She has different attributes.
Mm-hmm.
And so my whole thing like flipped. Like it was the thing that I would have said, oh, these are the top 5 things I want her to have. Like that became no longer important. And the things that I probably didn't think were that important became like my top 5. And then the whole type of girl, I mean, Katrina does not look like anything that I dated in my 20s at all. She's nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's so opposite all of that. And then we have this incredible partnership.
Yeah. And you obviously found your
And so, and I just think that a lot of people suffer from that and it's tough because you have such a pool that the trauma, there's so much connection and there, you feel all these hormones and chemicals going and the roller coaster of the highs and the lows of the fighting and the makeup and it makes people, they get all that confused.
Especially if you grow up in a household like
yes.
that. Yes. Because it feels familiar.
Yes.
You don't realize
it. Familiar. The emotion of the down and the up again gives you a high. And so so many people attribute that to love. And it's really just a fucked up lust, trauma lust.
Yeah.
And they don't even, and they don't know.
Wow, that's such a good way.
And they don't even know it. And they're stuck in this loop until they kind of break that. Yeah. And I tell you, it's a difficult thing to break because you have to be aware of it. That's the first step. And then after you become aware of it, you really have to kind of get out of your comfort zone to date something and to try things that you never would before.
Sure.
And, you know, and it's a trip. And what I thought was the most interesting, like looking back at our relationship is like I had a similar pattern and people that probably can connect to this, like, you know, like you connect to these people that are the wrong people, right? The ones that you connect through trauma and this with that. And it's like fireworks for the first 6 months, maybe even a year. And then it like plateaus. And then it's like then you see all the negative things of the relationship from that part.
It's a bunch of toxic bullshit.
What the reverse with Katrina was like, yeah, I'm into this girl. I'm into her. Let me see where this goes.
Built.
And here we are 13 years later. And I swear to God, every aspect of the relationship is better than what it was. And it's been like that.
That's great.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean we haven't had challenges and we've had all those things. But even every one of those, we come out even stronger, better. And it's like, that to me was the big, like, oh, okay, this is how it was supposed to
trauma
be.
Trauma-less Valentine's cards. Hear me out.
Hey, or a trauma-based dating app.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you really know what you're in
just
for.
Feed just feed right in. Just go right
you know what
into
you're
it.
Doing.
Yeah. Did you grow up in an abusive household?
You know,
household?
I don't.
So did I.
I don't know if I.
Abuse each other.
Yeah, dude.
High five.
I don't know if I ever shared this with you guys. I definitely haven't shared it on the podcast. I don't know if I shared it with you guys before, but when Katrina and I, for one of the things that she was so patient with me, because I was still coming out of that when we were first talking, when we weren't exclusively talking, we were just talking and dating off and on, see each other for a while, then not see each other. I was talking to another girl, and that other girl was like a total representation of like my old behavior, like my old trauma. Mm-hmm. And it was such a good, it was so awesome that she was patient enough to like stick it out with me during that. So I could like,
cause you could see the contrast.
Yes. One week could be with that one. Another week could be hanging out with her and then go back. And then I remember going like, what am I even doing fucking around with this girl? Like all the drama and the shit and all this stuff. But yet I kept coming back and I'm like, that's my old shit still attached to
that's
that.
That's so crazy.
Knowing that I know I shouldn't be there. You
that's
know?
So crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, speaking of dating, did you guys know that there's this? Oh yeah, you guys do know this. I forgot who told Robert. Robert told us about this. Did you guys know that there's this thing about strong men? So strong men competitors who are massive. They're massive. They're giants.
Yeah.
That they tend to date tiny ass petite women. Do you guys know this?
Yeah.
This is like an actual thing.
You visibly see that with some of these strongman competitors. So even like, their wives are like tiny.
Yeah, they make any woman look small. They're big. These guys are like 6'5".
Yeah, like, also, they're like 5', what, 2', 3',
yeah.
Something
they date like they date and marry women. They're like 5'1", 5'2". And did you know that there's a scientific explanation for
that? I was going to say, the theory would be that, okay, because when you're that big, it's unhealthy. Your organs are bigger. You don't normally live as long. And so it's an unhealthy thing to have.
Yeah.
And so you would probably want to balance that out for evolutionary.
Correct.
So, okay, that's so funny.
That's the theory. The theory is that evolutionarily speaking, that the genes are trying to bring it back to the
more normal,
the medium.
Yeah.
You know, right down to the middle.
Interesting. Now, what's funny is that I think
we need more freaks. Like, we need some big people to
just get them all together.
Yeah, just bigger ones.
Yeah. But so, bro, what's his name?
Big means bigger.
Well, you know, it's funny about that, though, but there's examples of that, like when, like, the super two.
Yeah,
super,
see, look, who's this?
That's Hapthor.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Hapthor.
Yeah. And she's got heels on, bro.
Yeah,
you know, he could put her in his pocket.
He's
also a giant,
astronomical.
He's also,
huge.
But isn't she like 5'2"?
Yeah,
she doesn't look that short. She actually looks really kind of. She looks.
That's in heels.
But compared to him, yeah.
No. She's actually. I think if you look her up, she's really tiny.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's like you're.
She's 5'2".
5'2", bro.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
so wow, yeah. She's petite anyway.
Yeah, she's.
And how tall is he?
He's giant.
What is he like? 6'8", 6'9"
Yeah, she just kind of.
Now, do you think the same
carrier for her?
Do you think the same evolutionary draw is there for her too? Because she's smaller and that she there's a part. That
bro, he's 6'9".
Yeah. He's 6'9", dude.
He's 6'9".
Oh, my God.
That's crazy.
Dude, Spina's 6'9". So I rewatched the Dennis Rodman documentary.
Yeah.
How crazy is this? Have you ever even heard of anyone doing this before? You know that he didn't even make, the high school basketball team. He was no good.
Yeah, you did. You told me that.
Junior college. Yeah. He played a little.
He, sucked for a while.
Yeah, and at 20 years old, after junior, he graduated high school at 5'9".
What?
5'9".
Where the hell did he get his big growth spurt?
6'9" at 20 years old. He grew a foot in a year.
That's weird.
Weird.
I have not heard of that.
Yes.
That's got to hurt.
A foot.
Doesn't that hurt?
And then all of a sudden had game, dude.
I wonder how awkward he was for that year.
And he wasn't. That was what made him such a super athlete was he grew that foot.
And then boom, was good.
And was good. Yeah, played just fine with it.
That is weird.
Like a snap, like overnight.
Isn't that interesting?
My brother went, not like
that's
that.
That's crazy.
My brother went through a crazy growth spurt. We thought he was going to be short. Up until he was a sophomore, he was like, he was like five. I don't remember how tall he was, but he was now he's 6'2 or 6'3. But it all happened in 1 year.
So that was me too, my junior year. So I was a point guard, 5'3". I was my freshman year, sophomore year, I was 5'3". And then my junior year, I shot all the way up to 6 foot.
Oh, so that's funny.
You went from 5'3 to 6 foot in 1 year?
Yeah.
Were you hungry?
Now, yeah.
Like, did but you?
That's.
You know what I mean? That's a lot of nutrients.
But that's also, now I Jeet was.
I hope you did.
That's a lot of growth, dude.
It like, is. I did have a harder time with my growth. Because as a point guard, soccer player, 5'3", I was short and quick. And then all of a sudden I became this lanky guy. And it was, I wasn't as coordinated as
what was it like?
I went through that in my junior year. So, I mean, I was like point guard and I was like all like the skill positions and everything. And then, yeah, it was like, for me, it was more, I grew a few inches. So I went from like probably like 5'10 to 6, foot, but it was more of like my body changed. I got like big,
Because you were lifting?
Yeah. And so and it just like almost instantaneous. And so then I went to play basketball. I had no shot. And it took me the entire season until the very end of the season. I finally got on the court.
My height was pretty consistent. And I was almost as tall as I am now by the time I was a freshman. But the big difference was the summer between freshman year and sophomore year, I lifted weights and ate a lot. And I came back to school. I think I gained 20 pounds or 25
that's a
pounds.
A lot as a kid.
Bro, I showed up and everybody was like, what the hell happened to you? And then I was deadlifting. I was squatting. All I did was eat and lift that entire summer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just blew up. I got stretch marks in my legs and my shoulders. Just exploded. So when you went back to school, kids must have been like, who the hell are you?
I was always like a skinny kid. So I just looked like I lanked out quite a bit.
Look like someone stretched
you. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it is a lot in a short period of time. But I don't know. I guess it doesn't look as noticeable. It wasn't like I got a bunch of muscle put on me. That's which all you care about as a kid. You know what I'm saying? Like nobody was like, I didn't shoot up to like crazy heights. 6 foot cool.
I care because my dad was 6'7". My brother 6'3", 6'4".
You were waiting for the growth spurt.
I was that kid that was like squeezing, or like hanging on things,
drinking
like,
hella milk,
hoping
because the commercial,
like a whole lot of hope, dude. Didn't go anywhere.
That's hilarious. Hey, yeah. So we're as of the recording of this, when this drops, we'll be coming back, I believe.
Yeah,
we're gonna be heading
flying out tomorrow.
We're gonna be flying out to meet with a bunch of coaches and train. Which these are my favorite. Travel in general, I'm not a big fan of, but I love meeting with coaches and trainers so much. I really look forward.
Every time we come back.
I always get excited about it.
I do, man.
Every time we come back from one of these trips, it's fulfilling.
Well, you hear their success stories. You hear about how they're building their businesses, why they became trainers. Trainers in general tend to be, and the ones that really want to make it a career, I should say, they tend to be very passionate.
Super passionate.
And growth-minded.
It's contagious.
And growth-minded. Yeah. And I think you learn that through fitness. You have to be growth-minded if you pursue fitness because you're going to suck for a long time.
It's also who we are at our core, right? It's not like anybody in here was like, if you asked us 20 years ago, like, one day I want to be a podcaster.
Yeah, I want to be a big dude.
Didn't want to do this.
Oh, slap
I never, yeah, I never wanted to do this. No, you know? No, 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 I think.
I just knew I didn't want to talk about fitness, but I think it would be.
Yeah, I love trainers. I love, and I enjoyed working with trainers more than I did clients. So I like trainers even more than I like being a trainer.
They're the ones I always, when I go to the gyms, those are the ones I watch and try and connect with every time I work out.
And I think there's such a skill and art to being great at that craft. And so if we can, you know, part any sort of wisdom.
Speaking of which, our 3-day free training is up. It's up and running. We've talked about it now a couple times. So this for trainers, if we put up a 3-day training where we teach you how to get leads, how to build your business, how to project and forecast how much you're going to make, and how to close deals and present packages. MindPumpTrainerCourse.com. It's totally free. So we put that up. That was all part of something else, but we wanted to put that up for free for people to check out. All right, speaking of social media, I got to show you, there's all this talk on social media about this girl that they call the hippie rapper.
The hippie rapper?
They call her the hippie rapper, and it's literally...
Does she actually rap?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But people either defend her or hate her.
Okay.
Why? Completely. Just watch.
Let me see.
Okay, let's post.
Bad bitch, powerful and savage, activated goddess. I've been on my boss shit, confident and divine. Damn, my avatar's so fine. Sexy on the inside. If I want it, it's mine. Let me hear you sing. La da da di da di da di la da da di da la da da di da di. I got bad bitch energy.
That's it.
So it's what's her name?
Is she super viral or no?
Super viral. Okay. Her name is Shanine Blake, and she lives in. I think she lives in the like Amazon. And it's like,
she just like roll out of Burning Man.
They just,
somebody just TikToked her.
Yeah. So someone sent that to me. He's like, you got to talk about this. Apparently, like, she talks about ayahuasca, speaking to the spirits. That's part of her rap. She's like this doing psychedelics or whatever. And so you read the comments. The reason why someone sent this to me, like, you got to read these comments. People are like, you know, I try to pride myself in not automatically hating someone, but that just broke that. Like, there's people like that.
Oh my God.
People like, poor girl, leave her alone. You know, she seems like a good person or whatever. It's crazy how divisive it is. But she looks like ayahuasca. Like, if ayahuasca was a person, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they would look like?
I think so.
Does she call herself a hippie rapper or is that?
No, her name is, I don't know, actually. She pulled up her YouTube.
Yeah, can I see? What's her, I'm going to see what her
name is. Her name is Shannon Blake or Shanine Blake?
Shanine Blank, I believe.
Seems nice enough, but.
Yeah, there she is right there.
Oh, okay.
A million followers.
Oh, wow.
Blowing up because, and the controversy's like.
Because what? She's just attractive.
Yeah, let me see her page a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, I feel bad for people hating on her so much because she's just doing her thing or whatever. I mean, I could see she's kind of weird, but I don't know.
That's your trauma lust talking. Yeah.
Doug. Trauma.
I'm gonna copyright that. Trademark that shit.
Bro, that's a book, dude. You got a book right.
Trauma lust.
I swear to God.
I trauma lust you.
Literally, it's one of the most like amazing wisdom packed rants you ever went on your entire life.
That's all I gotta do is,
Yeah, it was so well branded too. Trauma lust.
Ranting.
Yeah, good stuff. But anyway, it's just funny like how people will go viral because people will hate them or argue. You know what I mean? It's just that's
she's getting hate. That's so late. Like,
a lot
why?
Of hate.
Like, who cares, dude?
I don't know, dude.
Stuff like that. It's just like what I mean. She's just putting music. Well,
it's like I talked about
crazy.
Earlier, man. The Instagram or social media in general has just become such a toxic, terrible,
so toxic,
cesspool,
so
dude.
Bad, dude. It's so weird, right?
It's so it is weird. It's weird that you know, and I think a lot about what Peterson said to us. Like that still has stuck with me when you know I asked him about TikTok and what he thought and like Twitter. The future of Twitter and is, you know, can Elon come in and help it? And he was just like, no, it's impossible because it defies the rules of our society.
It rewards all the worst things.
There's no way to do it because the natural, borders and rules that work in the real world just don't exist there. So it ends up amplifying the worst of us and the best of us get no airtime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's just, there's really nothing you can do about it unless you totally control the whole thing, in which case it's no longer social media.
Yeah, I know. And I get mad at myself when I engage. Like there's times where I feel like I want to engage and then I do it. And then once you like, you start to pull that thread, it just goes. Like, you can't, it's so hard if like somebody gets at you and then you go, okay, I'm gonna send a zinger back, or I'm gonna say something, or I'm gonna tell them, you know, or put them in their place, or check them, or correct them, and you do it, and then an onslaught of more people come on, and then you're just, now you're going after this one and defending this one, and it's before you know it, you're like, and it's just, why? Those people in the real world, I wouldn't even give them the time of day to talk to them.
Those people in the real world, nobody would want to talk.
Yeah, they're not likable.
At all.
Like, yeah, they would not.
They filter their way out of the conversation. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're, okay, I see where you are. I'm over here.
And nobody wants to hang out with you.
Yeah, yeah, you would never take that person serious. You would never allow them in your conversation anywhere else. And so, and then I allow them to do that. And it's like, God, I have to, that's why I hate that.
It's wild, right?
I'm out of there soon.
There was this young lady that did, she was a kid, actually sent this video to Jessica because it was profound. It was this kid and she was doing like a, I don't know, it's like kind of like a poem. You know, when they, it's kind of like a poem, and she was reading it, and the title of it was Our Parents Were Right, It's the Phones. And she does this whole like poem about, oh, I didn't believe my parents. They said it was the phones or whatever. She talks about how it's affected her. I'm a shell of myself. I compare myself to other people. Mm. I feel terror, this and that. And it was this young kid. She must have been like 15 years old doing this whole thing, and it was going viral with other kids watching it. So there's hope. I think a lot of kids are becoming aware, because there's a generation right now that's coming up whose parents, this is my older kids. My older kids were part of this generation where we gave them devices, not fully understanding what the hell we were doing.
Yeah.
But I think the generation even younger than them, I think now people are starting to become aware.
Yeah.
And the kids themselves are starting to say things like,
oh, I mean, there is an optimistic side to all this. And that is because of things like Moore's Law, because of the ability to connect and reach with anybody across the world instantaneously, we do tend to learn these lessons faster.
Yeah.
So like, you know, when we, you know, 100 years ago, mm-hmm. when, you know, cultures adopted bad ideas and it would permeate a society for 50 to 100 years.
Yeah.
You know, before you realize, like, right, oh, that's a bad way to run the family. That's bad. Where here, it's like, and it seems so awful to us, but it's like a decade. That's it. It takes a decade of fucking up, and we see enough.
Do you think it gets like it's faster, but it hits a higher, a quicker extreme?
Yeah. Well, you have to ask yourself, is it a quicker extreme, or are you just aware of all the bad stuff right away?
That's a good question.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, that's a really good question.
Yeah. If it was, just think
so
like
so many data points at once.
Maybe
the
pendulum just bounces faster now. Because of which
is optimistic. That's positive.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's not a bad point.
So there is that side to this. Is
I gotta
this
think
side
about that? That's interesting.
That we tend to.
I mean, I would assume that's why we sense this feel of like we're off kilter. We're like out of. It's like because it's all at once. Like we're trying to like course correct on so many things at once.
Well, yeah, because it's only been that recent. Are we that connected that fast? Yeah. Right.
Like, well, the world's problems and shit.
Yeah. Well, like, I'll tell you what. Just in our space, right, health and fitness. I see the crazy information getting posted and promoted about diet stuff, which has been, since I can remember, I've seen crazy stuff being put, like the food pyramid and, you know, all these official guidelines that were just opposite of what was healthy. So they're still doing that. But what's interesting now is when I see a post on social media of like, here's a plant-based, you know, burger, you know, enjoy it, it's good for you. The comments underneath are not supportive. Most of the people underneath are like, no, you're crazy. Real meat's better.
Now. Yeah.
You know, no, this is, you know, whatever. This is much better.
Yeah.
Like a company like ButcherBox, for example, you know, that company's exploding, and it's got to be the awareness that social media is creating.
Oh, yeah.
Because the awareness of health around the, you know, grass-fed meat and all that stuff.
No, I think I 100% think that that is the positive side of what we're seeing right now is that.
That's a good way to look at it. You might be right.
I mean, I'm back when we used to have this debate, you know, a couple of years ago, that was kind of how I would always lean on. It's like, you know, I believe the pendulum will always swing back, and it does feel like the pendulum is swinging faster. It does feel like it's swinging harder too. But I think part of why it feels like it's swinging harder is because you're aware of all of it right away. Where before it would be happening, you know, states across or worlds across from you, and you wouldn't even know about it. And then you hear about one scenario, but you didn't hear about the million that happened leading up to that one situation once it finally made your town. Mm-hmm. Where now it's like instantaneously you see every town and every mm-hmm. person that's struggling with that thing. And then it feels
spreads like wildfire, but then people are like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that's probably the most positive thing about that. I think we will adopt a healthier relationship with tech. I think people are starting to wake up. And it'll be when the schools start picking up on it, and it's something that we start to teach all children on.
I think for kids we need to be regulated. I do, like drugs.
Yeah,
you know, I'm very like anti-regulation for the most part, but when it comes to kids, I definitely see value in regulation. Like I don't think you know alcohol should be illegal, but I definitely agree with it. You know, being for someone who's 21 and older. So I do think regulations for children are a good idea. I do think it's going to spread too. I think, especially with social media and technology, you're going to probably see more regulations because people are starting to see.
I mean, I don't know. I remember I brought up the whole Disney thing with them, like starting to do more in-person things. I think you're going to see, you know, community and in-person, like, I think it's on its comeback. I really do. In fact, if I had to make a bet, like on like, you know, if you're in a business, like, I would double and triple down on community, on in-person things, on stuff like that, because we went so hard in this direction of work from home and virtual and Zoom and all this that like that was so cool that we could do all that we're starving.
Perhaps the pandemic was a gift in that way.
Yeah.
Like it kind of forced everybody to go real extreme in the way that we were going anyway.
Yeah.
And then everybody was like, this sucks.
It isn't working.
I don't like this. Mm-hmm. I need to be around people.
Hold on, Hunter.
Yeah, interesting. All right, so today's shout out is one of the new free guides that we have out there. Our partners at mphormones.com put together a peptide guide. It's free, and it covers all of the popular, most effective, most used, or well-known peptides, and it goes over what they do, what they don't do, how to take them, that kind of stuff, and it's free. It's at mindpumpfree.com, and it's a peptide guide. It's totally free. You already know the benefits of probiotics. They reduce anxiety. They can help some people with depression. Of course, they help with digestion. They help with your skin. Well, there's a company we work with called Seed. They make the world's best probiotic, hands down. They actually have a device that shows the capsule going through what would be simulated as the digestive tract and delivers live bacteria to your colon. Other probiotics don't do that. They get destroyed in the gut. So this is the leading company when it comes to probiotics. That's why we work with them. Go check them out. Go to seed.com/mindpump. Use the code 25mindpump for 25% off your first month's order of Seed's Daily Symbiotic. All right, back to the show.
First question is from Skulls of Kings. How much volume is considered too much? How many sets per muscle group should we aim for? 6, 8, 12?
So this one's hard to answer because of the individual variants, but the data does show that per muscle group per week is probably around 9 to 18 sets. That's a big range, right? Between 9 to 18 sets is what's going to be considered.
It's a big range, Sal, but it's important. I love that. I like talking about this because I didn't know that as a kid, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that there was like a sweet spot for that. I assume more is better.
Yep.
And so I think understanding that falling somewhere between 9 and 18 total sets for the week is just a good goal for most people. Like, and if you're way under that, there's lots of room for you to potentially scale up in volume. If you're over that already, you probably need to bring it down.
Yeah, the things that should be considered with this, well, there's the obvious, right? Your recovery ability and lifestyle, your experience, fitness, that kind of stuff. That's an obvious one. But the other things you want to consider are, what kind of sets are we talking? Like, I could do a lot of sets of cable, laterals, way more than I could a standing overhead barbell press. Like, you know, set compared to set is not the same. Free weights tend to be more damaging than machines, even if the exercises are the same. Compound lifts more damaging than single joint lifts. Higher reps within, you know, the range of what's considered, you know, normal or appropriate tends to be more damaging than lower reps. Of course, intensity plays a big role. Are these hard sets or the easy sets? So many factors that need to be considered. I think the important thing, though, is you're better off not trying to seek what your max is. You're better off trying to not see how much you could tolerate, but rather how little can I get away with and still make progress.
Yeah.
That'll guide you in a much better way, right?
I mean, you guys, if you were like, let's look at just some the major lifts.
Yeah.
Like, you would never do 18 or more sets of squatting or deadlifting in a week.
I mean, it would have to be like low intensity, right?
Yeah, even then I wouldn't, because 12 sets of squatting in a week is a good amount.
Four sets 3 days a week.
Yeah, yeah. And even then I'd modify intensity.
Totally.
I'd only have one really hard day.
I would not do
12
hard sets of squats.
No. So having 18 is like crazy amount. I mean,
I'm averaging right now, and I'm very consistent. Now, granted, I have a lot of stress. I have kids, the whole deal. I'm 45, but I'm also on testosterone and numerous peptides and more supplements than.
And eat very healthy.
And I eat very healthy. I do, on average, I would say I'm probably closer to 15 sets per body part per week. So between 10 to 15 sets. I don't even go up to 18 per week. When I start to push it past 15, then I start to notice, it's too much. I start to get sore and not really able to recover very well. For most of my training career as a trainer, my clients typically did best around 6 to 9 mm-hmm. per body part per mm-hmm. week. My consistent clients.
Also consider this, that there are other ways to increase volume with less risk. For example, like you are increasing volume if you did the exact same amount of sets as you did the previous week, but you slowed every exercise down by 2 seconds on the
intensity went up.
Yeah. Intensity went up on that. Time under tension went up on that. Volume. So technically volume is up, right? And you're not moving the bar more times. You're not putting a bunch more weight on there. You're just slowing the tempo down. And so there's things that you can do to increase volume that isn't just the straight, formula.
Now, Adam, because you tracked all this, and I don't know if you remember this, but when you were competing, obviously you've been training for a long time. You also were on anabolics. What was the peak amount of sets you were doing per body part?
20
per week.
That was a peak.
See, and that was pro.
Yeah, that was, and pro. That's pro. And after 3 years of like never missing
and running some gear.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was taking way more testosterone. I wasn't just taking testosterone too. I was taking steroids that enhanced my recovery process and things like that too.
So, and you were trying to get good sleep and the whole
deal. Yeah. So, I mean, I was, and you could argue looking back that, I probably was still doing more than that was necessary, right? I probably could have scaled back. But that was at my absolute peak. Mm-hmm. I mean,
Another thing to consider with this, in my experience, is the sets, if they're spread out throughout the week versus all in one workout, they tend to be far better.
Oh yeah.
So like instead of doing 15 sets for back on Monday, I tend to get way better results.
Way
when I better do. For recovery and just overall performance as you're doing the
way
exercise.
Better because totally. When you, if you try, and that's why that's why I was such a, once you converted me over to like full body routines, I never looked back, because I used to do body part splits so much like that, where 15 to 20 sets of a muscle group in one workout and you hammer it. And when you're really honest with yourself and you look back at like the quality of that workout, it's like you do two maybe really good exercises, and then at where that you really can push it, you're really making gains and strides, and then all the rest are fillers,
nonsense,
pumpers.
Finishers.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finishers, pumpers, doing machines, and you're already gassed. You're like, I already gave it everything I could on those deadlifts, and those big rows. Like now my, all these other exercises I'm doing, I'm not getting much out of it other than just pumping blood in the muscle. Whereas if you divide it up over the week, it's like I have an opportunity to go hit a compound lift on each one of those that will really move the needle. And I'm fresh because it's a new workout. Mm-hmm. So it always made a big difference then.
Next question is from SmitDog416. Do you build cheat days into your nutrition plan, especially around birthdays and holidays?
The whole concept of cheat days is so stupid because all it encourages is this I'm on a diet, off a diet mentality and behavior that is not it is not conducive to a sustainable approach when it comes to nutrition. It just isn't. No. Sometimes you eat food that doesn't, isn't great for you physically. So what? Maybe it's good for you to a different reason. I'm hanging out with my friends. We're enjoying ourselves. Or I'm at a birthday party. Like scheduling cheat days means, number one, you tend to white knuckle it until you get to the cheat day and tend to overdo it. Two, you have the cheat day whether you maybe need to or not. I noticed this. People are like, oh, it's my cheat day. I guess I have to have a cheat meal. And again, it encourages us like I'm on or
overindulgence.
There's no balance.
Oh, and it also implies you're doing something wrong. You're not doing. So we just had Easter, right? Not that long ago. And, you know, I chose to have a drink of bourbon, you know, that, and that was like my choice. And I didn't go like, oh, I'm going to schedule a couple drinks and a cheat day that day. There was all kinds of candy and all kinds of desserts. So that, and you know, I was like, you know what? Today I'm barbecuing all day long. I'm going to enjoy the tri-tip meat and some of the sides, and I'm going to have a glass of alcohol. It wasn't like I planned it. And it really was about the moment of being there with my family, enjoying all that. And I think that like, there's no need if, and by the way, too, I think it's important that we didn't make this clear too. If I'm talking to normal people, like if you're a competitor, this is a different story because you're tracking everything, you're measuring.
That's an extreme anyway.
Right. So yeah, maybe that person you're scheduling these kind of,
because you have to track.
Yes, but everybody else, no, I don't think you should schedule cheat days. They will naturally happen. Holidays will happen. Social events will happen. You'll probably have to learn to not indulge more times than not. And I think that's a better practice to have. Is like, do I really need that, or do I really want that? Like, for example, back to the Easter example. Like for me, I really didn't want the dessert that bad. I wasn't going to do it just because it was a holiday. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to go buck wild and eat everything, drink and do everything. It was like, no, none of that sounded good. But you know what did sound good? I'm standing out by a barbecue for 4 hours smoking meat. A glass of bourbon sounded really good while I'm hanging out with my brothers and my girl and stuff. Like that sounds way more enjoyable.
Totally. Yeah. I think scheduling cheat days, it's really, I've never seen it lead to a good, balanced, relaxed relationship with nutrition. Like the ideal or the goal is to be able to eat in a way that serves you, where you know, you're healthy, generally healthy, not extreme, but healthy. And it's not stressful. If it's stressful, if you're constantly stressed about it and you have to schedule these breaks where you break a free and you're able to go out and, get to finally eat these foods that I'm thinking about all day long, then you're doing it wrong. And it's going to be a very, very hard road to sustainability. The odds are you're not going to be able to do it.
Too much intensity around, food in general. I mean, it's like, relax. Like you're going to have some flexibility there and it's not always going to go according to plan. But, you know, as long as you just, your intention's always there of like trying to make the better decision, eat the whole foods, you know, these interruptions happen. So instead of putting all the intensity and focus on go buck wild this one day and like schedule it, it's just, it just adds more fuel to the negative fire.
I mean, I kind of feel the same way about even days off from the gym too. I think life organically happens. It's just like, there's going to come a time where it's harder to get to the gym. And so it's like,
that's your day off.
Yeah. It's your day off. Instead of like, oh, I'm going to take this day off all the time. It's like, well, no, my goal is to try and actually do something.
Ebb and flow, man.
Yeah. My goal is to do something physical and active every day. What happens? That doesn't happen. And so it's like, you know, I just have to schedule that. Same thing with the food.
Next question is from Sarah Maya. Can you discuss the differences between processed unhealthy foods versus non-processed unhealthy foods? I notice there is a massive difference in how I feel having a homemade dessert versus prepackaged and processed.
Okay, so one thing we have to understand about food is, yes, there's foods that are better for you physiologically than other foods. But the thing that you really want to pay attention to and manage with food, there's two things. One, your relationship to that food. Why am I eating this? Am I anxious, stressed, tired? Am I trying to distract myself, whatever? But the second part is, and this is for people who struggle with overeating, okay, which is a lot of people, it's most people, does this food help, or is this food something that makes it very difficult for me to not overeat? The reason why processed foods fall in the category of the types of foods that make it very difficult to not overeat is because they are engineered precisely to do that. So when you make a pie from scratch, you're doing the same thing that the scientists are doing with processed foods, except you're not working with all the chemicals and ingredients and you don't have the
technology
the technology. You're using things like sugar and flour and cinnamon and fruit and stuff like that. They're using that. Plus they're using all kinds of chemicals that you don't have access to in perfect, precise measurements tested through with, you know, millions of dollars or billions of dollars. If you think of the whole industry of how to make it so irresistible that it makes you really drives you to overeat. So, you know, a pie that you made yourself, still going to make you want to overeat because it tastes delicious. stuff you buy at the store that's in a package, like they spent a lot of money, time and energy, and they've got access to things you don't have access in your cupboard to make that food just so desirable. It's hard to not overeat.
Yeah, I think it's important to make it clear too that both foods are considered processed. One's just more processed.
Yeah.
If you make a bunch of things and add together, that's a process, right? It's now processed food. It's not, you've added this and this. Yeah. And so to make it more palatable. And so just to your point, it's like you're doing the same thing they are. You just don't have access to the exact things that make.
By the way, here's a hack for quote unquote unhealthy foods that you make yourself. Make them yourself and make them with a family member. Because now what you've done, yes, you're making pie or cookies or brownies or whatever, not necessarily healthy for you physiologically. But what you are doing is deriving value from the connection with the people around you in the process of making it. So now I'm going to eat these brownies that aren't necessarily physically healthy for me, but it was healthy for the time I spent with my kid making them, or with my wife while we were hanging out in the kitchen putting these together. And it adds a whole nother element to the food that you're eating, because food isn't just about the nutrients and the macros and all that stuff. It's also what it means and what it represents. And if you made the pie with your aunt together and you spent, 2 hours doing it, the conversation around it and the work around it, you still got pie at the end. But like that 2 hours you spent with your aunt, like it's very valuable, very healthy thing. So now you've made that food. There's a whole nother element of health that comes to it with it.
Next question is from Fulvio Castle. Is it better to move more and eat more, or to move less and eat less?
Isn't that a good question?
That is a good question.
Yeah. I think the extremes are both terrible, right? Like if you're just moving so much and eating so much that you're just like, that's not good. If you're just going crazy with it. And if you're like not moving at all and not feeding yourself, that's also terrible. So, but if we stay within the confines of, I guess what would be appropriate, I'd say move more and eat more.
I mean, I think, try and answer this question if you were talking to yourself. So if you're assessing where you're currently at with your life.
And, oh, I see.
And like, what would
it be better for me to move more and eat more, or move less and eat less?
Yes.
For me, move more and eat more. I do work out most days, but that's the activity I do. I work out for 45 minutes or an hour, and then the rest of the day I'm sitting.
That's my answer too. I don't move enough. So I think that's how I would, I guess
that's a good way to do it,
to start this question or try and answer this best as we can. Cause obviously always the individual variance is so important. Right. I know I don't move enough consistently anymore. Not like I used to, So I need to move more, and I don't even hit 10,000 steps consistently. So that right there in itself,
I'd be surprised if I hit 6,000 steps
a day. Yeah. So that right there tells me like I would be far better off moving more and eating a little more food than I would be like, oh, I'll just eat less because I'm not moving very much because I'm already eating a low amount of calories.
What do you think, Justin? Same thing?
Yeah, same thing. Move more, eat more. I mean, it's just like, I'm trying to think of like who would benefit from moving less and eating less other than
like super hardcore.
Yeah. Like person that's just already burning, a gajillion calories.
Yeah. That'd be that person. Maybe like the 18-year-old version of you.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Take a break.
Honestly, in order for me to kind of gain my first bit of muscle when I was younger, that's kind of what I had to do. I had to move less. I just could not keep up with the amount of calories I needed to consume in order to put mass on my body. And so I had to reduce the amount of activity that I'm doing. But
yeah, hard gain.
Movement is, and here's the thing too, like, because we're kind of addressing this question from the aesthetic or like, body composition. But just moving more in general is healthier for it.
I think that's where my conundrum is. It's like move more is like everything. Like eating more, yeah, sure. But like, eating less, I could even put in with moving more. Like I just think the movement part of it, we're engineered to move. It's like a responsibility we have with our body. And so it's like for me to say I need to move less, like there's a downward spiral to that. I don't want to be a part of.
I agree. If you think of the average person in modern society, we simply do not move enough.
No,
I think people in cities that are really, really inconvenient to drive in,
like New York or San Francisco,
they tend to get a decent amount of movement. I have a cousin who lives in San Francisco, and he walks a lot because if he wants to go to the grocery store,
yeah, so he's structured.
He's got to walk. If he wants to go here, you got to everywhere he goes, he walks, and he doesn't even own a car because it doesn't make any sense to own a car there.
Yeah.
But aside from that, like the average person, like what's the average life look like now? Right, you wake up, you get your breakfast, you drive your kids to school, drive to work, sit down all day, get up to the bathroom, and then that's it. And then get in your car, drive home. You know, pick up your kids, come home, sit down again,
yeah,
eat dinner, sit down and watch TV and go to bed.
And even if you're a fitness fanatic, like you would consider yourself, and you train every day for 1 hour, you still ain't moving that much.
No, my I'm still sedentary because I literally work out for 1 hour and then we're in here and then I go home.
And you're better off than the guy who doesn't work out at all, for sure, but you definitely.
This is why I like strength training so much is for the average person because.
It's protective.
Yes, because having muscle really does protect you or buffers you against the negative effects of not moving more than not having muscle. So movement is better just period across the board. But if your life means you're not going to, like if you have a desk job, like there's only so much you could do, building some muscle really does protect you quite a bit against that stuff. Look, if you like the show, you got to head over to mindpumpfree.com. Check out our peptide guide. It's a free guide, teaches you about the most popular peptides. Also, you can find us on social media. Justin is on Instagram, mindpumpjustin. I'm on Instagram at Mind Pump DeStefano, and Adam is on Instagram at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.